some apart. Most of the groups were arguing. Clary couldn't make out the words, but she could see the angry gestures. Her eyes scanned the crowd for familiar faces. No Luke, no Jocelyn, but there were the Lightwoods. Robert in his inquisitor's robes beside Maris. There were Aline and Helen and the crowd of Blackthorn children. And there, down in the centre of the amphitheatre, were the four carved wooden seats of the Downworlders, set around the lecterns in a half circle. They were empty, and splashed across the floorboards in front of them was a single word, scrawled in a crooked hand, in what looked like sticky gold paint. Vienni. Jace moved past Clary, into the room. His shoulders were tight as he stared down at the scrawl. "That's Eichel," he said. "Angel blood." In a flash, Clary saw the library at the Institute, the floor slicked with blood and feathers, the angel's hollow bones. "Erchome, I am coming." And now the single word, "Vieni, I have come." A second message. Oh, Sebastian had been busy. Stupid, she thought, so stupid of her to think he'd come for only her, that it hadn't been part of something larger, that he hadn't wanted more destruction, more terror, more upheaval. She thought of his smirk when she'd mentioned the battle at the Citadel. Of course it had been more than an attack. It had been a distraction. Turning the gaze of the Nephilim outward from Alicante, making them search the world for him and his Indarkand, panicking them over the wounded and dead. And in the meantime, Sebastian had found his way to the heart of the guard and painted the floor in blood. Near the dais was a group of silent brothers in their bone-colored robes, faces hidden by hoods. Her memory sparking, Clary turned to Jace. "Brother Zachariah, I never got a chance to ask you if you knew whether he was all right." Jace was staring at the writing on the dais, a sick look on his face. "I saw him in the Basilius. He's all right. He's different."
"Good different?"
"Human different," Jace said, and before Clary could ask him what he meant, she heard someone call her name. Down in the center of the room, she saw a hand rise out of the crowd, waving toward her frantically. Isabel. She was standing with Alec, a little distance from their parents. Clary heard Gia call out after her, but she was pushing through the crowd already, Jace and Simon at her heels. She sensed curious stares being cast in her direction. Everyone knew who she was, after all. Knew who they all were. Valentine's daughter, Valentine's adopted son, and the Daylighter vampire. "Clary!" Isabel called, as Clary, Jace, and Simon pulled free of the staring onlookers and nearly fell into the Lightwood siblings, who had managed to clear a small space for themselves in the middle of the crowd. Isabel shot an irritated glance at Simon before reaching out to hug Jace and Clary. As soon as she released Jace, Alec pulled him over by the sleeve and hung on, his knuckles whitening around the fabric. Jace looked surprised, but said nothing.
"Is it true?" Isabel said to Clary. "Sebastian was at your house last night."
"At Armitage's, yes. How did you know?" Clary demanded. "Our father's the Inquisitor, of course we know," said Alec. "Rumours about Sebastian being in the city were all everyone was talking about before they opened up the council room and we saw this."
"It's true," Simon added.
"The consul asked me about it when she woke me up, like I know anything. I slept through it," he added, as Isabel shot him an inquiring look.
"Did the consul say anything to you about this?" Alec demanded, sweeping an arm towards the grim scene below. "Did Sebastian?"
"No," Clary said. "Sebastian doesn't exactly share his plans. He shouldn't have been able to get to the Downworld representatives. Not only is Alicante guarded, but each of their safe houses is warded," said Alec. There was a pulse going on in his throat like a hammer. His hand, where it rested on Jace's sleeve, was shaking with a fine tremor. "They were at dinner. They should have been safe." He let go of Jace and jammed his hands into his pockets. "And Magnus, Magnus wasn't even supposed to be here. Katerina was coming instead of him." He looked at Simon. "I saw you with him in Angel Square on the night of the battle," he said. "Did he say why he was in Alicante?" Simon shook his head. "He just shooed me away. He was healing Clary." "Maybe this is a bluff," Alec said. "Maybe Sebastian is trying to make us think he's done something to the Downworld representatives to throw us off."
"We don't know that he's done anything to them, but they are missing," Jay said quietly, and Alec looked away as if he couldn't bear to meet their gazes.
"Vienni,"
Isabel whispered, looking at the dais. Why?
He's telling us he has power, Clary said. Power none of us even begin to understand.
She thought of the way he'd appeared in her room and then disappeared, of the way the ground had opened under his feet at the Citadel as if the Earth were welcoming him in, hiding him from the threat of the world above. A sharp report rang out through the room. The bell had called the council to order. Gia had moved to the lectern, an armed Clave guard in hooded robes on either side of her.
Shadow hunters, she said as the word echoed clearly through the room as if she'd used a microphone. Please be silent.
The room subsided gradually into quiet, though from the rebellious looks on quite a few faces, it was an uncooperative quiet.
Consul Penhallow, called out Kadir. What answers do you have for us? What is the meaning of this desecration?
We're not sure, said Gia. It happened in the night, in between one watch of guards and another.
This is vengeance, said a thin, dark-haired shadow hunter, whom Clary recognized as the head of the Budapest Institute.
Laszlo Balogh, she thought his name was.
Vengeance for our victories in London and at the Citadel.
We didn't have victories in London and at the Citadel, Laszlo, said Gia. The London Institute turned out to be protected by a force even we were unaware of, one we cannot replicate. The shadow hunters there were warned and led to safety. Even then, a few were injured. None of Sebastian's forces were harmed. At best, it could be called a successful retreat.
But the attack on the Citadel, Laszlo protested. He did not enter the Citadel. He did not reach the armory there.
But neither did he lose. We sent through 60 warriors, and he killed 30 and injured 10. He had 40 warriors, and he lost perhaps 15. If it hadn't been for what happened when he wounded Jace Lightwood, his 40 would have slaughtered our 60.
We're shadow hunters, said Nazreen Chowdhury. We are used to defending that which we must defend with our last breaths, our last drops of blood.
A noble idea, said Josiane Pontmercy, from the Marseille Conclave, but perhaps not entirely practical.
We were too conservative in the number we sent to face him at the Citadel, said Robert Lightwood, his booming voice carrying through the room. We have estimated since the attacks that Sebastian has 400 Endarkened warriors on his side. Simply given the numbers, a head-to-head battle now between his forces and all shadow hunters would mean that he would lose.
So what we need to do is fight him as soon as possible before he turns any other shadow hunters, said Diana Rayburn.
You can't fight what you can't find, said the consul. Our attempts to track him continue to prove fruitless.
She raised her voice.
Sebastian Morgenstern's best plan now is to lure us out in small numbers. He needs us to send out scouting parties to hunt demons or to hunt him. We must stay together here in Idris, where he cannot confront us. If we split up, if we leave our homeland, then we will lose.
He'll wait us out, said a blonde shadow hunter from the Copenhagen Conclave.
We have to believe he doesn't have the patience for that, said Gia. We have to assume he will attack, and when he does, our superior numbers will defeat him.
There's more than patience to be considered, said Balogh. We left our institutes. We came here with the understanding that we would be returning once we had held a council with the downworld representatives. Without us out in the world, who will protect it? We have a mandate from heaven, to protect the world, to hold back demons. We cannot do that from Idris.
All the wards are at full strength, said Robert. Wrangel Island is working overtime, and given our new cooperation with downworlders, we will have to rely on them to keep the accords. That was part of what we were going to discuss at the council today.
Well, good luck to you with that, said Josiane Pontmercy. Considering that the representatives of Downworld are missing.
Missing. The word fell into the silence like a pebble into water, sending out ripples through the room. Clary felt Alex stiffen minutely at her side. She hadn't been letting herself think about it, hadn't been letting herself believe that they could really be gone. It was a trick Sebastian was playing on them, she kept telling herself. A cruel trick, but nothing more.
We don't know that, Gia protested. Guards are out searching now.
Sebastian rolled on the floor in front of their very seats, shouted a man with a bandaged arm. He was the head of the Mexico City Institute and had been at the Citadel battle. Clary thought his last name was Rosales. Fanny, I am calm. Just as he sent us a message with the death of the angel in New York, now he strikes at us in the heart of the guard.
But he didn't strike at us, Diana interrupted. He struck at the representatives of Downworld.
To strike at our allies is to strike at us, called Maris. They are members of the Council with all the attendant rights that represents.
We don't even know what happened to them, snapped someone in the crowd. They could be perfectly all right.
Then where are they? Shouted Alec, and even Jace looked startled to hear Alec raise his voice. Alec was glowering, his blue eyes dark, and Clary was suddenly reminded of the angry boy she had met in the Institute what felt like so long ago.
Has anyone tried to track them?
We have, said Gia. It hasn't worked. Not all of them can be tracked. You cannot track a warlock or the dead.
Gia broke off with a sudden gasp.
Without warning, the Clave Guard on her left had come up behind her and seized her by the back of her robes. A shout ran through the assembly as he yanked her back, placing the blade of a long silver dagger against her throat.
Nephilim! He roared, and his hood fell away, showing the blank eyes and swirling, unfamiliar marks of the Indarkened.
A roar began to rise from the crowd, cut off quickly as the guard dug his blade farther into Gia's throat. Blood bloomed around it, visible even from a distance.
Nephilim, the man roared again.
Clary's mind struggled to place him. He seemed somehow familiar. He was tall, brown-haired, probably around 40. His arms were thickly muscled, the veins standing out like ropes as he struggled to hold Gia still.
Stay where you are. Do not approach or your consul dies.
Aline screamed. Helen had hold of her, visibly restraining her from running forward. Behind them, the Blackthorn children huddled around Julian, who was carrying his youngest brother in his arms. Drusilla had her face pressed against his side. Emma, her hair bright even at a distance, stood with Cortana out, protecting the others.
That's Matthias Gonzalez, said Alec in a shocked voice. He was head of the Buenos Aires Institute.
Silence, roared the man behind GM Matthias, and an uneasy silence fell. Most Shadow Hunters stood, like Jace and Alec, with their hands halfway to their weapons. Isabel was clutching the handle of her whip.
Hear me, Shadow Hunters, Matthias cried, his eyes burning with a fanatic light. Hear me, for I was one of you, blindly following the rule of the Clave, convinced of my own safety within the wards of Idris, protected by the light of the Angel. But there is no safety here.
He jerked his chin to the side, indicating the scroll on the floor.
None are safe, not even Heaven's messengers. That is the reach of the power of the Infernal Cup and of he who holds it.
A murmur ran through the crowd. Robert Lightwood pushed forward, his face anxious as he looked at Gia and the blade at her throat.
What does he want? He demanded. Valentine's son, what does he want from us?
Oh, he wants many things, said the Indarkened Shadow Hunter. But for now, he will content himself with the gift of his sister and adopted brother. Give him Clarissa Morgenstern and Jace Lightwood and avert disaster.
Clary heard Jace suck in his breath. She looked at him, panicking. She could feel the gaze of the whole room on her and felt as if she were dissolving like salt in water.
We are Nephilim, Robert said coldly. We do not trade away our own. He knows that.
We of the Infernal Cup have in our possession 5 of your allies, was the reply. Meliorn of the Fairfolk, Raphael Santiago of the Night's Children, Luke Garraway of the Moon's Children, Jocelyn Morgenstern of the Nephilim, and Magnus Bane of the Children of Lilith. If you do not give us Clarissa and Jonathan, they will be put to the deaths of iron and silver, of fire and ruin. And when your Downworld allies learn that you have sacrificed their representatives, because you would not give up your own, they will turn on you. They will join with us, and you will find yourselves fighting not just he who holds the Infernal Cup, but all of Downworld.
Clary felt a wave of dizziness, so intense it was almost sickness, pass over her. She had known, of course she had known, with a creeping knowledge that was not certainty and could not be dismissed, that her mother and Luke and Magnus were in danger, but to hear it was something else.
She began to shiver, the words of an incoherent prayer repeating over and over in her head. Mom, Luke, be all right. Please be all right. Let Magnus be all right for Alec, please. She heard Isabel's voice in her head too, saying that Sebastian could not fight them and all of Downworld. But he had found a neat way to turn it back on them. If harm came to the Downworld representatives now, it would seem the Shadow Hunter's fault. Jace's expression had gone bleak, but he met her eyes with the same understanding that had lodged like a needle in her heart. They could not stand back and let this happen. They would go to Sebastian. It was the only choice. She started forward, meaning to call out, but she found herself jerked back by a hard grip on her wrist. She turned, expecting Simon, and saw to her surprise that it was Isabel. "Don't," Isabel said. "You are a fool and a follower," snapped Kadir, his eyes angry as he regarded Matthias. "No Downworlders will hold us accountable for not sacrificing two of our children to Jonathan Morgenstern's pyre of corpses." "Oh, but he will not kill them," said Matthias with vicious glee. "You have his word on the angel that no harm will come to the Morgenstern girl or the Lightwood boy. They are his family, and he desires them by his side, so there is no sacrifice." Clary felt something brush her cheek. It was Jace. He had kissed her quickly, and she remembered Sebastian's Judas kiss the night before and whirled to catch at him, but he was gone already, away from all of them, striding out onto the aisle of stairs between the benches. "I will go," he shouted, and his voice rang through the room. "I will go, willingly." His sword was in his hand. He threw it down where it clattered on the steps. "I will go with Sebastian," he said into the silence that followed. "Just leave Clary out of it. Let her stay. Take me alone." "Jace, no," Alec said, but his voice was drowned by the clamor that ran through the room, voices rising like smoke and curling up toward the ceiling, and Jace stood calmly, with his hands out showing he had no weapons, his hair shining under the light of the runes. A sacrificial angel. Matthias Gonzalez laughed. "There will be no bargain without Clarissa," he said. "Sebastian demands her, and I deliver what my master demands." "You think we're fools," Jace said. "Actually, I know better than that. You don't think at all. You're a mouthpiece for a demon, that's all you are. You don't care about anything anymore, not family or blood or honor. You're no longer human." Matthias sneered. "Why would anyone want to be human?" "Because your bargain is worthless," said Jace. "So we give ourselves up, and Sebastian returns his hostages, then what? You've been at such pains to tell us how much better he is than the Nephilim, how much stronger, how much cleverer, how he can strike at us here in Alicante, and all our wards and all our guards can't keep him out, how he'll destroy us all. If you want to bargain with someone, you offer them a chance to win. If you were human, you'd know that." In the silence that followed, Clary thought you could hear a drop of blood strike the floor. Matthias was still, his blade still pinned against Gia's throat, his lips shaping words as if he were whispering something or reciting something he had heard. Or listening, she realized, listening to words being whispered in his ear. "You cannot win," Matthias said finally, and Jace laughed, that sharp, acerbic laugh Clary had first fallen in love with. Not a sacrificial angel, she thought, but an avenging one, all gold and blood and fire, confident even in the face of defeat. "You see what I mean," Jace said. "Then what does it matter if we die now or die later?" "You cannot win," said Matthias, "but you can survive. Those of you who choose it can be changed by the Infernal Cup. You will become soldiers of the Morning Star, and you will rule the world with Jonathan Morgenstern as your leader. Those who choose to remain the children of Raziel may do so, as long as you remain in Idris. The borders of Idris will be sealed, closing it away from the rest of the world, which will belong to us. This land granted to you by the Angel you will keep, and keeping within its borders you will be safe. That you can be promised." Jace glared. "Sebastian's promises mean nothing." "His promises are all you have," said Matthias. "Keep your alliance with Downworlders,
Stay within the borders of Idris and you will survive. But this offer stands only so long as you give yourselves willingly up to our master. You and Clarissa both, there is no negotiation.
Clary looked slowly around the room. Some of the Nephilim looked anxious, others fearful, others full of rage, and others were calculating. She remembered the day when she had stood up in the Hall of Accords in front of these same people and showed them the binding rune that could win their war. They had been grateful then. But this was also the same council who had voted to cease searching for Jace when Sebastian had taken him, because one boy's life had not been worth their resources. Especially when that boy had been Valentine's adopted son. She had thought once that there were good people and bad people, that there was a side of light and a side of darkness, but she no longer thought that. She had seen evil in her brother and her father, the evil of good intentions gone wrong, and the evil of sheer desire for power. But in goodness there was also no safety. Virtue could cut like a knife, and the fire of heaven was blinding. She moved away from Alec and Isabel, felt Simon catch at her arm. She turned and looked at him and shook her head. "You have to let me do this." His dark eyes pleaded with her.
"Don't," he whispered.
"He said both of us," she whispered back. "If Jace goes to Sebastian without me, Sebastian will kill him."
"He'll kill you both anyway," Isabel was nearly crying with frustration. "You can't go, and Jace can't either. Jace!"
Jace turned to look at them. Clary saw his expression change as he realized she was struggling to get to him. He shook his head, mouthing the word, "No."
"Give us time," Robert Lightwood called. "Give us some time to cast a vote, at least."
Matthias drew the knife away from Gia's throat and held it aloft. His other arm circled her, his hand gripping the front of her robes. He raised the knife toward the ceiling and light sparked off it at the gesture.
"Time?" he sneered. "Why should Sebastian give you time?"
A sharp singing noise cut the air. Clary saw something bright shoot past her and heard the noise of metal striking metal as an arrow slammed into the knife Matthias held above Gia's head, knocking it free of his grasp. Clary whipped her head sideways and saw Alec, his bow raised, the string still vibrating. Matthias let out a roar and staggered back, his hand bleeding. Gia darted away from him as he dived for his fallen blade. Clary heard Jace call out.
"Nakir!"
He had drawn a seraph blade from his belt and its light illuminated the hall.
"Get out of my way," he shouted, and began to shoulder his way down the steps toward the dais.
"No!"
Alec, dropping his bow, flung himself over the back of the row of benches and dived on top of Jace, knocking him to the ground just as the dais went up in flames like a bonfire doused with gasoline. Gia cried out and leaped from the platform into the crowd. Kadia caught her and lowered her gently as all the shadow hunters turned to stare at the rising flames.
"What the hell?"
Simon whispered, his fingers still clasped around Clary's arm. She could see Matthias, a black shadow at the heart of the flames. They were clearly not harming him. He seemed to be laughing, throwing up his arms over and over as if he were a conductor directing an orchestra of fire. The room was full of shrieks and the stink and crackle of burning wood. Aline had run to clutch at her bleeding mother, weeping. Helen was watching helplessly as, along with Julian, she tried to shield the younger Blackthorns from what was happening below. No one was shielding Emma, though. She was standing apart from the group, her small face white with shock as, over the already horrible sounds filling the room, Matthias's cries pierced the din.
"2 days, Nephilim! You have 2 days to decide your fate. And then you will all burn. You will burn in the fires of hell, and the ashes of Eden will cover your bones."
His voice rose to an unearthly shriek and was suddenly silenced as the flames dropped away and he disappeared along with them. The last of the embers licked across the floor, their glowing tips barely touching the message still scrawled in ichor across the dais. "Vieni, I have come." It had taken Maya 2 minutes of deep breathing outside the apartment door before she could bring herself to slide the key into the lock. Everything in the hallway seemed normal, eerily so. Jordan's coats and Simon's hung on pegs in the narrow entranceway. The walls were decorated with street signs bought from flea markets. She moved into the living room, which seemed frozen in time. The TV was on, the screen showing dark static, the two game controllers still on the couch. They'd forgotten to turn off the coffee pot. She went and flipped the switch, trying as hard as she could to ignore all the pictures of herself and Jordan stuck to the fridge. Them on the Brooklyn Bridge, drinking coffee at the Waverly Place Diner, Jordan laughing and showing off his fingernails, which Maya had painted blue and green and red. She hadn't realized how many pictures he'd taken of them, as if he'd been trying to record every second of their interactions, lest they slip through his memories like water. She had to steel herself again before she could go into the bedroom. The bed was still mussed and untucked. Jordan had never been particularly neat, his clothes scattered around the room. Maya went across the room to the bureau where she'd kept her own belongings and stripped off Leela's clothes. With relief, she threw on her own jeans and t-shirt. She was reaching to pull out a coat when the doorbell rang. Jordan had kept his weapons issued to him by the praetor in the trunk at the foot of the bed. She flung the trunk open and scooped up a heavy iron vial with a cross carved into the front. She flung on her coat and stalked into the living room, the vial in her pocket, her fingers wrapped around it. She reached out and yanked the front door open. The girl who stood on the other side had dark hair falling sheer to her shoulders. Against it, her skin was dead white, her lips dark red. She wore a severely tailored black suit. She was a modern Snow White in blood, char, and ice. "You called me," she said. "Jordan Kyle's girlfriend, am I correct?" "Lily, she's one of the smartest of the vampire clan, knows everything. She and Raphael were always thick as thieves." "Don't act like you don't know, Lily," Maya snapped. "You've been here before. I'm pretty sure you grabbed Simon from this apartment for Maureen." "And?" Lily crossed her arms, making her expensive suit crackle. "Are you going to invite me in or not?" "I'm not," said Maya. "We're going to talk here in the hallway." "Dull?" Lily leaned back against the wall with its peeling paint and made a face. "Why did you summon me here, werewolf?" "Maureen is crazy," said Maya. "Raphael and Simon are gone. Sebastian Morgenstern is murdering downworlders to make a point to the Nephilim. And maybe it's time for the vampires and lycanthropes to talk, even to ally."
"Well, aren't you as cute as a bug's ear?" Lily said and stood up straight.
"Look, Maureen's crazy, but she's still the clan leader, and I can tell you one thing. She isn't going to parlay with some jumped-up pack member who's lost a plot because her boyfriend died." Maya tightened her grip on the bottle in her hand. She yearned to throw the contents in Lily's face so much that it frightened her.
"Call me when you're the pack leader."
There was a dark light in the vampire girl's eyes, as if she were trying to tell Maya something without saying the words. "And we'll talk then." Lily turned and clicked off down the hallway on her high heels. Slowly, Maya loosened her grip on the bottle of holy water in her pocket.
"Nice shot," Jace said. "You don't need to make fun of me." Alec and Jace were in one of the guards' dizzying array of meeting rooms. Not the same room Jace had been in earlier with Clary, but another more austere room in an older part of the guard. The walls were stone, and there was one long bench that ran across the west wall. Jace was kneeling on it, his jacket thrown aside, the right sleeve of his shirt rolled up. "I'm not," Jace protested, as Alec set the tip of his steely to the bare skin of Jace's arm. As the dark lines began to spiral out from the Atomus, Jace couldn't help but remember another day in Alicante, Alec bandaging Jace's hand, telling him angrily, "You can heal slow and ugly like a mundane." Jace had put his hand through a window that day. He deserved everything Alec had said to him. Alec exhaled slowly. He was always very careful with his runes, especially the Arazis. He seemed to feel the slight burn, the sting against the skin that Jace felt, though Jace had never minded the pain. The map of white scars that covered his biceps and ran down to his forearm attested to that. There was a special strength to a rune given by your Parabatai. It was why they had sent the two of them away, while the rest of the Lightwood family met in the consul's offices, so that Alec could heal Jace as quickly and efficiently as possible. Jace had been rather startled. He'd half expected them to make him sit through the meeting with his wrist blue and swelling up. "I'm not," Jace said again, as Alec finished and stepped back to examine his handiwork. Already, Jace could feel the numbing of the arats.